and every leaf and every blade of grass gleamed. Even if you felt too angry, envious, betrayed, or thievish to appreciate such weather and shot him in the back, I would have thought that the air was too sweet, the sky too blue, the sun too soft, and the breeze too crisp to roll him over and shoot him twice more in front. Besides, Newbury's village cemetery was already jam-packed with the living. Half the town was there, led by my great-aunt Constance Abbott, who steadied herself with one gloved hand on her silver-headed cane and the other on my elbow as we walked grave to grave to watch neighbors costumed in period dress portray the ghosts of Newbury notables, gone but not forgotten. Newburyans were having a fine time that summer celebrating our tercentennial by resurrecting the past. A baseball game, played by 1879 rules, was scheduled next for our 300th birthday party, then a fireworks picnic that the fire marshal swore would burn down the woods. All this commemorating was having the wonderful effect of introducing newcomers to old, and if longtime residents of modest salt boxes were not yet shaking hands with Hummer House arrivists, they were at least exchanging smiles. Aunt Connie and I stopped to listen to Rick Boland, an IBM commuter who was impersonating Silas Barrett in vest and shirt sleeves. Silas had founded the first general store on Church Hill Road. Rick had moved to Newbury a few years ago and worked hard on volunteer boards, committees, and commissions. A cross-every-T and dot-every-I fellow. He had nailed old Silas right down to his merchant's pursed lips as he read aloud from general store account books. We listened for as long as we could. Moving on, we could hear faintly the voice of my lifelong next-door neighbor Scooter McKay, publisher, editor, and ace reporter of the weekly Newbury Clarion, sailing uphill from the Abbott plots.
Yo-ho-ho, Anna.
I hurried Aunt Connie in the opposite direction. This change of course stood us face to face with an aggressive addition to the burying ground, a brand new mausoleum, purchased for $500,000 from a website that offered to engrave your family name above the door. Tall, wide, and gaudy, sporting mirror-polished granite, a bronze door embossed with acanthus leaves, and a spiked fence to hold back the riffraff, it stuck out like a McMansion in an apple orchard. Frequenters of the Yankee Drover's cellar bar had nicknamed it McTomb. The only other mausoleum in the ancient graveyard was a 19th-century structure erected by the first generation of McKays to mint money publishing the Clarion. Call me old-fashioned, call me too old for my years, but it seemed somehow more substantial than the new one. Smooth, not polished, blocks of Vermont granite stood on a firm base of rough-cut stone, and it had fluted pillars and a Greek cross on its peaked roof. A stained glass window depicted a scantily clad pre-Raphaelitic fellow, lither than any McKay I ever met, cranking a printing press.